Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to Kings of Non Sequitur. Any topic, any subject, anything goes. With your hosts, Jay and Dre. You know it. We are indeed kings of non sequitur. We are in the house for a hot 60 minutes of I have no idea what we're going to talk about, but that's the fun of it. You are listening live to us on a Tuesday night, June the 20th, 2023. I'm Dre. He's Jay. Hey, we're just going to shoot the breeze like we always do. We're going to get really deep like the Titanic, although right now that's probably not a good idea. Did you read? Did you read how low the submersible was cleared to go as opposed to how low the actual Titanic is?
Well, yeah, because I think the Titanic's at like 12,000 feet deep. It's a pretty ridiculous number. So I did not see. What was it rated for?
About 4,500.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Just a little short.
Yeah. And then I saw another thing that said that the little submersible was controlled by a video game controller. Not kidding.
No, I saw it too. They're going to play Pac-Man with human beings live. That's a great idea. Just brilliant.
So
brilliant all around.
Is the general assumption that they ain't, because I keep seeing the ticking clock. Oh, they have 50 hours of air left. Well, they might not have any air if that thing was 8,000 feet below its rated depth.
Don't think it's something you should really look for a happy ending. I don't really see that. I don't see that turning out well. Not that I know a lot about submersibles or anything like that. But
right.
I was just kind of like, really? This is what you want to do?
I can tell you something that
size
is going to be a whole hell of a lot harder to find than the Titanic.
It's not the Titanic, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's a fraction of the size.
And
it took
decades to find the Titanic. So how long is it going to take to find this little thing? I mean, if it, let's say it got crushed and just swept away in the ocean stream, and you know, things just don't sink like rocks all the way straight down.
I'm guessing it might be a Amelia Earhart situation where we just never see it again.
Well, there could also be a happy ending. Let's not give up hope. Keep hope alive.
Sure. Okay.
Well, you know, it's not over till it's over.
That's Jay, the ultimate optimist at all times.
that's a new one.
We laugh because we have to, because situations like that, that's kind of how we handle them, is we kind of chuckle at them. It's probably not nice, but we don't know them, so it doesn't really affect us, let's be honest. Anyway.
That's right. If I was a billionaire, I'd probably do a better job of vetting the submersible company that's taking me down on the dive to the Titanic.
Probably. But you know what? Here's one good news. They were looking for the Titanic. Something tells me they found it.
Hey, hey!
A lot sooner than they probably expected to. Yeah, I know. Still too soon. Anyway. So how's your summer been going? What the kids do for Father's Day?
We just hung around the house and had a nice day and had a barbecue that evening and just a nice day home spent with the kids and the family, and I can't ask for better than that. They were really nice to me for a day. That always helps.
As opposed to what? Wait a minute.
Well, no, you know.
We got breaking
extra,
news here. They
extra
usually
nice.
Assholes to you or something.
No, extra nice.
Oh, okay. All right. And Cute Factor is up and about?
Yes, she's walking around. She's got a little bit of a limp. But she's walking, and you know, she's in physical therapy twice a week, and once they clear her for walking normal, she'll be able to move on to running, and she's on the schedule she should be on. So We were told when it happened and she had the surgery that they expected full recovery by, you know, July, and it looks like we're on our way.
That's great. Excellent. Great to hear.
No, it feels like it's been a lot longer.
Right.
You always hear about life's flying at you and it's fast. No, since this happened, which was the day after Easter, it does not feel like it's only been a few months since it happened. It's feels like we've been dealing an ordeal that we've been dealing with this for much longer. So we'll be glad when she's all better and back to normal.
Yeah, I can only kind of measure by my own timeline of things, you know, that I'm going through. It feels like a long time ago because I remember when it happened, I didn't have feeling in my left hand. I was going through nerve issues, and that's cleared up. So that's a while ago. That's a couple months ago at least. So, yeah, things move along, and great to hear that things are progressing, and I'm very, very happy for that. It's been a weird summer over here for me as I've been going through these different interview processes for college football scouting coming up in the fall. I don't think it's going well, but I don't actually know these things. I don't know.
This is turning into a saga for you.
It is. So the one interview that I described to you on the last show was for a different outfit, and I think a newer outfit of scouting. They call themselves Scouting Heroes. I thought that interview went well, except for the part where he found out I had no knowledge of college football as far as the current events and who's the champion and who played in the playoffs just this past January, February, and all that. I haven't heard a thing from them since. The football season isn't really that close to starting. We're still in late June, so there's a chance that they'll still get back to me, but I'm just telling you facts. Whenever that interview happened last month, now it's June 20th and I still haven't heard a thing back. So not going to really worry about that. In the meantime, I got another interview for another video scouting position. That was the Scouting Heroes. That was to actually go out to the games because they were asking me about University of Mississippi and Arkansas State, in addition to University of Memphis. Then I saw a couple of positions by the parent company of the people that I used to do the baseball work for. That was Baseball Info Solutions. This is Sports Info Solutions, their parent company. They're looking for video scouts for the upcoming college football season. That's obviously remote. Where I wouldn't have to go to the games, but they're also looking for local people to go to the games and do work there as well. So I didn't exactly know what all that entailed, but I knew I went to the games for baseball and whatever that was. I didn't really know when I got into it, but then they sent me this little test game and I did okay enough where they hired me. So I said, well, maybe it's the same thing. And I enjoyed the baseball, and the football actually looked to pay a lot better than the baseball. If I read it correctly, it looks like basically triple what each game was for baseball. So I said, yeah, I'll go out for that. I'll try for that too. So I had sent in applications for both. And so what I've been doing now is going through dual applications and everything that comes with both of those positions. And it's different. So the video interview process, there's been one already with them, and there'll be a second one that's going to be coming up this coming Friday. And the first one happened last Wednesday. And again, similarly to the Scouting Heroes interview, I thought it went overall pretty well, except for a couple of parts where he kind of tried to test me and see where my football knowledge was, and I came up a little short, and I didn't do nearly as well as I hoped I would do, or nearly as well as maybe somebody who hosts a football podcast for 10 damn years should have done. basically he's asking me things like, so describe to me the difference between cover one and cover three. And I'm like,
well, cover one would be a single high safety, see, and a cover three would be three high safeties.
Oh, see, look at that. You, again, oh. Maybe you should be the one applying for these jobs. I don't study strategies in football. It's like, okay, there you go. I really and one of the questions he asked was also about cover two and what would be the best way to attack it. Now that I definitely know from Madden.
Ah, over the middle.
Yeah, exactly. I said the middle linebacker drops. The middle linebacker drops back in coverage, so you want to go over the middle and attack that voided area. Uh-huh. And he seemed like he was impressed with that answer. But, yeah, I knew enough about cover three where I said, well, there's three zones being split up and defended. And he's like, yeah. As opposed to one.
Yeah, it's basically a three deep zone. So
yeah. But I didn't really know how to – I never sat there and tried to describe it. I never went through coaching again.
Right.
This isn't my forte. I watch football definitely. It definitely has brought home to me how little actual football that I watch and how much more that I could stand to learn because my watching has been very – on the surface, like my greatest depth as far as watching has been pay attention to the offensive and defensive lines, and that'll show you basically whoever wins the line of scrimmage usually wins the game. That's kind of the deepest I've ever gone. You know, I've never had the all 22s. I don't look at the coverages and the safeties and the corners and what are they playing press or man. I usually don't pay attention to the stuff like that. And obviously they're trying to hire people who have knowledge of that, and that's what you're going to be looking into when you're doing this video studying. So that's what he explained it to me is kind of split up into like watching one team and looking at all the things they do on offense during a game, watching one team, watching everything they do on defense. You wouldn't be watching the whole game and trying to pick up everything. That would be impossible. But you would be assigned either one team watching their offense, watching their defense, or what he called watching their participation. So basically just charting everyone that comes into into every play and comes out of the game and just making sure you know who's on the field for every play. So they wouldn't try to have somebody doing everything, trying to look at everyone who comes in and also all the coverages that they're in and all of that stuff. That would be insane. But the challenge of doing that, I'm looking forward to it if I'm able to fool these people into giving me that scouting position that basically is an internship. It doesn't really pay anything, but that's how crazy I'm going with my day job that I've been at since I moved down here. It's so dead. There's some days we're just really sitting there for several hours waiting for some work to come in, and it definitely was not like that when I first got down here. It was hot and heavy and plenty of work and plenty of people there, and is definitely going the wrong way right now. It's definitely trending bad. So I think I'm looking at this as sort of a way out, or a possible shift as far as if I can get this scouting position and do well enough that maybe they'll find a full-time type job for me. Maybe I'll prove good enough to where they'll trust me with more and more assignments, and I can make that sort of my primary thought process as far as making money and not have to worry about this day job. And then if I can supplement that by actually going to games and doing that position, which is a different interview process and a different testing process. So there was testing involved for the video scouting. They sent me where I had to go and log in and put my email in and go to a website where they had these videos set up where you go, okay, this is what's happening on this play and what's the offensive line doing, what kind of blocking, the zone blocking and all that. Here's the all 22, where's the defense at, what's their coverage. Very intimidating, very, difficult to figure out for someone who's not used to trying to look at all that type of stuff. And then the last part of that test was, here's a play. Here's one play. Here's 7 minutes. Write down everything or type out everything you see on this play, everything that happened as far as the coverage, you know, what coverage was the offense in, what coverage was the defense in, and what blocking scheme was the offense using, what hole was the running back trying to hit. You got to figure that out. Not the hole that he actually hit. What hole was the play set up for him to hit? So it's really, really in-depth, and it's the type of thing where I'm confident if they train me and show me the things I'm supposed to be looking for, I'll get it right in the future. Right now, I'm not going to get too much of that right, but I did my best. I tried, and I'll say this. I did enough where they keep coming back to me in the interview process. I think if I really did as crappy as I feared I did, that they wouldn't even keep going forward with me, right? So that's what I'm holding out hope for. This interview that I did last Wednesday was a lot less time than the Scouting Heroes. That was like 40 minutes. This was like 15 or 20. And then right after that, he emailed me and said, okay, now you're moving on to the next interview process with a different person. That's the one that's coming up Friday, and it's going to be more, according to him, it's going to be more job-oriented interview. It's not going to be about football. It's going to be more, you know, job history and resume type stuff. That's a good thing. Now, as far as the actual going to the games, that was a whole nother process. Last weekend, they sent me that test, which was similar to baseball. They sent me a bunch of plays, and they said, you have to tell us what happened on these plays. It's not about schemes and really knowing football in depth. This is more, they actually sent me every single thing that you might possibly have to put in for a play. I guess I can read them all off because it's a real quick list. Completion, incompletion, design run, QB scramble, sack, positive yards, loss of yards, penalty, first down, touchdown, field goal, extra point, punt, INT, fumble, lateral, end of play, clock running, end of play, clock stopped, end of play, clock stopped, but will restart because they do that in college. Injured player, negated score, under center formation or shotgun formation, or field goal, extra point formation, or punt formation. That's it. Whatever happens on the play, you fill in the little bubbles and say this happened. It was under shotgun, and then they ran the play, and it was a running play, and they lost yardage or whatever. So it's just like the baseball work that I did in that it's just a straightforward documentation of this is what happened.
Yeah.
Right? That's all you're doing. I know I can do that because I did it in baseball.
Right.
So I said
that's all happening in real time.
It's all happening in real time. Now, it's going to be different from baseball in that it looks like they want you to do all of this on an app on your phone. It's not like I'm going to be sitting there with a folder like I was.
Yeah, I was going to guess this would be something that would be done on like an iPad or something like that, or a phone or something.
Yeah, it's going to be some app that I have to download and hope that the Wi-Fi is working at whatever stadium I go to, and hope that everything works out as far as, yeah, exactly. Guys, I tried, I really did, but the damn Wi-Fi wasn't any good, so I got nothing for you. Sorry. I'm sure there's going to be some technical issues with that. But I sent in the test, and I felt very, as opposed to the other tests for the video scouting where I'd send it in, I was like, I know I didn't get most of those. I know I screwed that up. This one, I sent in that test, and I felt very, very good about everything that I sent in. And like immediately the next morning, they came back, and they didn't give results of the test, but they said, you are now going to the next part of the interview process, which that's going to be tomorrow morning for that. So I think I did pretty good on that because they didn't get back to me immediately with the other one. So one way or another, I'm not counting eggs before they hatch, but I can't help but be upbeat and really looking forward to August. And I got a feeling. I feel like something is going to come about in August. I feel like there's going to be a little bit of a life switch or life change, or, you know, even just say I don't even get the video job, but I do get the gig going to the games on Saturday. That'll be an adventure, and that'll be something, you know, extra that I'll be looking forward to, and I'll have fun, and I'll make, you know, a little extra money. But if everything goes right, I'll get both, and I'll be able to sit there and look at the film and do the scouting work while I'm at work at my day job, sitting there on downtime, trying to not to fall asleep. I'll actually be working and you know, going towards becoming a, you know, maybe an actual football scout later, you know, in the future. Maybe if it all works out the way I'm hoping, that this actually turns into something that I can maybe make a new career out of. But then that's, you know, counting chickens a little bit before they hatch. That's like best case scenario type stuff. But I'm excited. I think something big is coming. I can feel it, and I'm really looking forward to. I've been bored as hell in June, just coming home and like, oh god, watching more baseball, watching more ump show, and you know, whatever. But I feel like July and August are going to be a whole new atmosphere for me. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, that's good. You know, and it keeps you in. It gets into the sports realm.
Yes, it's much more exciting as far as something that I really look forward to doing instead of just getting up every morning and, here I go to this job again. So that's what's going on with me. Speaking of the ump show, that's our latest addition to our very bloated soundboard, which I probably could sit there and work on pairing some of this stuff off. That's, you know, I'm looking for stuff to do. That's something I could do. But I'm watching all the ump shows happening, and I'm watching the pitch clock and the umps jumping out and trying to do this and do that. And no, you went too soon. And now the batter didn't get in the box.
Bad. But people really pay their hard-earned money to go see those umps. Those umps truly believe it.
That's what they act like. So it reminded me of old Enrico Palazzo. So I finally had to go. That's what it feels like watching these games. Like they're doing cartwheels and they're putting on the show.
Yep.
And now you're ejected. And now you're ejected.
Was that three guys got thrown out by one ump at one time?
In about 30 seconds, yes.
It's getting bad. And they're clearly patrolling around trying to find guys and things. And oh god, did you see the one where the guy, they said he was on the wrong side of second base and he clearly wasn't? For the defense, because you know it's supposed to be when the pitcher lets the ball go, and as soon as the pitcher started the windup, the guy would sprint into his position because he was on the bag, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And umps just, you know, they'd start waving their arms and
hey, hold on.
Oh yeah, and everything's
got to
be so
decision to make.
Everything's got to be so dramatic.
Seeing the one I think last weekend where the pitcher started to have some disappointment over a ball four, and the ump like took his mask off and started jawing and staring down at the pitcher. And I'm like, dude, what are you doing?
I'll tell you, my son's got his first playoff game tomorrow for baseball, and I can tell you after watching his games the last, 8-10 weeks or so or whatever it's been, there's some future MLB umps patrolling those little leagues.
Got some Enrico Palazzos out there.
Oh, man, I have seen balls throw. I have seen called strikes on balls over kids' heads. Called strikes. Not swinging strikes. Called strikes.
Yeah. They're getting ready to cartwheel.
I mean, we actually had one on video of a ball where the ball, when it crossed the plate, was actually over the kid's head. Of course, the kid doesn't swing, and he's punching these kids out. And it's like, oh man.
And doing the dancing and, yeah, moonwalk.
Yeah.
Now, you know what you got to do. You just got to teach your kids to start swinging over their heads.
Yeah, no. No,
they're going to get called out otherwise. So you got to.
Yeah, my son's actually got a pretty good batting eye. So when there's pitches that are questionable, he doesn't swing, and he gets you can see how frustrated he gets when those get called strikes.
Yeah. Kid, get used to it.
Yeah.
That's the beginning.
So that's tomorrow
gonna make
night.
These kids go to. They're gonna make them go to voodoo and start talking to their bats, and then next thing
that's
you
right.
know, they're gonna be.
She stopped. Not go voodoo. Look, I go to you. Stick up for you. You know, help me now. Fuck you, Jobu. I do it myself.
You got to get to that point at some point. You got to start talking to the bat and trying to make it work for you because you can't rely on the umpires to respect the strike zone.
They're not going to help you out.
No, they're busy putting on the ump show. Everybody's here to see the umps.
Sure feels that way.
So what else has been on your mind for this summer?
You know, it's just been we're a long way off from our normal. Like usually by now we're either really close to or we've already been on vacation, and we don't have anything really in the pipeline as far as going away at all for a while. And so it's just been this, you know. And obviously it's hard, you know, with Trin being injured. So it really has just been that one day leading into the next. Just trying to get through this, you know?
Right. That's the one saving grace I could tell you is at least you didn't have some grand vacation planned in June or July.
Yeah, we originally did. I don't know if I ever talked about that on the show, but we were originally planning on taking the kids down to Florida in June.
Oh, okay.
Right after they got out of school. And it was probably a week, maybe 2 weeks before she broke her leg that we were like, no, you know what? We're going to go in October because there's some strange week in October where they have 3 days off of school for whatever, you know, like teacher enrichment or it's report card season. So they only have a 2-day school week. So we're just taking them out of school for those 2 days and then we're going to make our trip. So we're like, okay, wow, we can go take a 10-day vacation and the kids are only going to miss 2 days of school and we could do it at a time of year when it's not going to be, as you know, being in the South, it won't be as oppressively hot and muggy. And I'm sure you're already on your way to that if you're not there already.
Yep, we're up in the 90s.
So we didn't want to really deal with, and we didn't want to go in July or August because that apparently is when it's the most brutal down that way, especially on the Gulf Coast.
Yes.
And you don't have the breeze coming in offshore anymore, and it's just hot and oppressive. And so we're going to go in October, and hopefully there's no hurricanes. And you know, although the kids want to see one, the kids are like, I hope there's a hurricane. I hope there's a tropical. Okay, slow it down a little bit there. We don't want to have to evacuate. And that would be a whole new vacation memory that we'd be creating. Guys, remember when we had to evacuate before the hurricane wiped the town we were staying in off the map?
My wife, who's here, who's from here in Memphis and been here all her life, anytime we get that millimeter of snow that shuts down the entire city.
Yeah.
She's always so excited. Oh, it's snowing. I want to see snow. And I'm like, first of all, you don't want to see snow. You think you do, but it's just because it's a something that's a novelty for you down here. And second of all, you don't want it to be heavy snow. You say you do, but that's because you don't have to work. Her job is such that that millimeter of snow, the job shuts down. Even if the streets are kind of good. Anytime it snows, the job that she has says, no, you don't have to come in. So it's much easier for her to say, yes, it's good to see snow and I want to see snow because she doesn't have to go to work when it snows. I still have to go to work because, as we know from COVID days, I'm essential. So I always have to go to work, even though we have no work.
But I get that.
They think they want to see a hurricane. They really don't.
No. No, while I share some of their sentiment that it would be cool to go through something like that, obviously it would need to be extremely weak, you know.
It's cool unless you get hurt.
Or it hits farther away from where we are and we just get the waves and some rain or something and they get to see some big waves. That's about all I need to see. I just want to go and have a relaxing week of vacation, not dodging hurricanes and tornadoes.
Yes, the tornado chasers. The tornadoes are cool to the tornado chasers until they get caught.
Oh, they're cool. They're cool to watch those. I watch the YouTube videos and stuff. Those are cool.
Mm-hmm. Because you're not.
Because I'm not the one driving away from a mile wide tornado that's trying to wipe me off the face of the earth.
Yes, that would not be cool. Yeah. I will never understand the tornado chaser. That's a whole different mentality.
You know, I get that too. I think that's kind of cool.
Not for me.
No, and where you are, I mean, you're under, any day could be the day.
Yeah, I definitely did not feel that threat all those years living in Chicago. Even though, downstate in Illinois, there's tornadoes all the time.
What was that? What was the big one? Plainfield. You remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that was down by what, Lockport and Joliet?
Well, that's kind of what we had the one here in Wynn, Arkansas was not that bad, but it was pretty bad. And that was, like, really close as far as not far at all from Memphis, maybe an hour.
Yeah.
Didn't
Little Rock just get hit by one earlier this year?
Probably the same series of ones that
Wynn
and Little Rock is a couple hours from us.
Yeah.
But Wynn is like right next door. So Wynn is so close that that's actually where my wife was born. So she's very familiar with the area. And like that high school in Wynn just got leveled, just completely destroyed.
Yeah.
So that's the closest it's gotten to us. But yeah, we didn't have that in Chicago or near Chicago all the time. But yeah, down here, it seems like every spring there's some tornado that looks like it's about to hit us, like maybe 5 minutes away, and then they just barely miss us.
Yeah.
We've been in our closet more than I care to admit. but that's pretty much her, always trying to be prepared. I'm just sitting here. I'm the guy that would be dead because the glass in the window got me in the neck because I didn't move because I was just like, yeah, it's not so bad.
Yeah. Right. Or I'd
be all right. It's going to pass
out the front door and go, ooh, where?
I wouldn't run out the front door, but most of the time I don't want to move when the sirens are going and the lights are flickering or whatever. It'll pass. Be all right. Just be calm.
Well, you got that whole boy that cried wolf thing going. Like when the sirens go off all the time, it's
right?
Not this time.
Okay. Yeah. One time it won't be okay, but hopefully that doesn't happen. How much of the NBA finals did you catch?
You know, I did not watch much, but this is so strange, but I was following it, if that makes sense. So
yeah, I understand.
I watched a little bit. But I was doing more of following, especially with the media narratives, especially with the Nuggets. Apparently, all you had to do to piss off the Nuggets was just no matter what point of the playoffs they were in or in the finals, just talk about the Lakers. That seemed to be the key to rile up the Nuggets. And I understood their argument because even as they were going through the finals, all the talking heads, everything was still about the Lakers and LeBron.
Yeah.
Nobody cared about the Nuggets and the Heat. The NBA did not really do a good job of pushing it. This is clearly not the narrative finals if you're trying to push a storyline or ratings. I mean,
but we knew that. We talked about it on the last show that it was going to be Denver and Miami.
Nobody wants the Nuggets in the Heat. And they dispatched them quickly. They're a good team. I mean, they were the number one seed.
And they were playing against the play-in. So
Now, that's a play-in team that ran through all the best teams in the East.
Or the best teams in the East kind of got themselves beat or ran through themselves. Like the Celtics and the Bucks, because
it was our last show. We were going on about how the Celtics were gonna. We were joking about them coming all the way back. Right? Well, they got them where they want them, and they end up coming all the way back just to get the doors blown off in Game 7. So you get this huge anticlimactic finish.
Man, I saw it coming.
What could have been historic, And it did
money on that. Ugh. Yeah, I knew they were going to do it. I knew they were going to do that. I knew the Celtics, because they're so damn soft, I knew they were going to rally all the way. Once they won game five, I said, oh, they're going to go to Miami game six and destroy them so they can force this historic game seven at home in Boston. They're going to shit the bed. That's exactly what happened. That's what they do.
And you didn't have a nickel on it. That's why it happened.
Didn't have a nickel on it. Nope, of course not.
Of course. Of course.
I knew they were going to do that.
The Heat were a nice story, but that really was a bunch of guys playing. You know, it was Jimmy Butler and guys that played all way over their heads.
That's absolutely correct. Also, the juju ran out. The shooting turned into shit at the wrong time for the Heat, for all their role players. And on top of all of that, probably most important of all of that, the star player ran out of juice. Like, Jimmy Butler clearly had less juice and less energy in the finals than he did in the first couple of rounds of the playoffs. Like, he put everything he had into carrying that team through the first two or three rounds. And by the time he got to the finals, he had nothing left, because he's not really a superstar. And he was playing superstar ball and playoff Jimmy and Jimmy Butler and all of that. And that it was great. It was the best month of basketball he's probably ever played in his life. But then the finals came and he kind of turned back into Jimmy Butler, who is okay, but not that great.
Well, yeah, but how sustainable is that? You can't put the entire team on your back and it's just going to keep going. You're going to keep going through all of these superior opponents. And I mean, and Denver wasn't having any of it.
Yeah, it's sustainable if you're an all-time great like LeBron James or Michael Jordan or somebody like that.
That Butler run with Miami reminded me of that first LeBron run with Cleveland.
Oh, that first Cleveland team that he got drafted to?
That first Cleveland run, yeah.
Truly LeBron James and dudes.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And they got blown out in the playoffs. I mean, in the finals, right? Yeah.
Made it to the finals somehow, some way, and then Tim Duncan and the Spurs just said, okay, that's cute. Get the fuck out of here. You don't belong here.
Correct.
And
that's exactly what Jokic and the Nuggets did to the Heat. So not the most, you know, perfect parallel, but the closest thing I can think of to what we just witnessed, which was, you know, a one superstar carries a team through just sheer will, and all those guys completely playing out of their minds, and then, you know, the clock struck midnight.
No, it is very similar. So with all of that, congratulations to the Denver Nuggets.
Yeah, good for them.
Bringing a first championship in franchise history to Denver. I'm sure Russell Wilson was very proud.
Broncos got you. That's right.
And so the finals end, and my wife turns to me almost as soon as it's over and says, who's the most famous player the Denver Nuggets have ever had? And I'm like,
Michael Adams?
Okay, we're 80s heads, so we're going to go. That's where I didn't go to Michael Adams, but I went back to the 80s, and I said, okay, they're – all-time franchise leading scorer is a guy named Alex English. You ever heard of him? And she's like,
oh, sure. I remember Alex English.
I said, okay. They had another great scorer named Fat Lever. You heard of, you remember it?
No.
No.
I just remember Michael Adams, because he was just like, he would shoot. He was like Steph Curry.
But
he wouldn't hit him. but as soon as his hands got on the ball, he'd shoot.
As soon as he stepped
Adams.
In the arena, he was open.
Yes.
Love
but that's
Adams.
Pretty sad that I can't think of that. That's not a culture rich historical franchise when we think about Denver. So I'm guessing that Jokic is now just their de facto best player ever.
Best overall players, certainly, absolutely. Most famous, I eventually landed on the correct answer, which doesn't have that much to do with basketball. It's more that he's, you know, he came out in sort of the beginning of social media, and his wife is famous for trying to be famous. And so a lot of people know who he is just through his wife, Lala. But actually, Carmelo Anthony would probably be the correct answer for the most famous Nugget. But his Nugget's career wasn't all that great.
But how long was he there?
He wasn't that long. He was original. They drafted him. So he was there for the first, years? and was a nomad after that, and did some good stuff with him, but, you know, obviously didn't take him to the finals or anything like that. But yeah, most people would know him more so than any, you know, Alex English or Kiki Vandeweghe or any of those. We're the 80s old heads, so we're going to remember those guys. But like casual fans, like my wife, never heard any of those guys at all. So this is it. This is the absolute peak of Nuggets basketball. This is they got an all timer. They drafted him in the second round, so they can always claim that as geniusness. Hey, he's great. Nikola Jokic is absolutely the man. He's got the MVP awards. Now he's got the finals MVP. And I won't go through all the numbers, but his postseason was...
It was something, yeah.
30 points, 13.4 rebounds, and 9.5 assists. He was kind of good. That's one play. That's one postseason.
There were points, and I don't know if he ended up finishing... with it, but they were saying that he was basically having like an all-time postseason.
Yeah, he might have averaged a triple-double in the finals itself,
which
was unbelievable.
Yeah, averaged.
Yeah.
Was that game one when he had the 20 assists?
He was one of those. He had a 30 and 20 with 10 rebounds or something like that. It was insane. He does it in such a style that you just look at him and go, no, that guy, no. He's not fast. He's not jumping over it. But when he wants a rebound, he gets it. He just says, okay, I'm taking this now. When he wants to score, he scores. He puts it in the basket. There's nothing. Bam Adebayo was trying his best. He was playing his ass off on defense. And Jokic was just throwing the ball in. Just, I don't care. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care what kind of front you're putting up in my face. I'm throwing this ball in the basket anyway because you can't stop me. Like, he is just – he's gotten himself to the point where anything he wants to do on the floor, he does it. And that's how you take a team all the way to the number one seed and all the way to the championship as a second-round draft pick. Like, he's not supposed to do that, but he just willed himself to do that, to be that good. He's worked so hard at his game. He's absolutely an incredible player. He's clearly bound for the Hall of Fame, and he might not be done. Like, they might come back. The core around him is pretty young. Jamal Murray is his second banana, and he's a very good scorer as well. He had a triple double in the finals as well. They might be at this a while. They might be number one seed again next year. Now the Phoenix Suns are trying to do what they can to put together a super team and challenge them. They traded for Bradley Beal this week, but I don't know if that's going to be enough. Like, Kevin Durant isn't getting any younger. He misses a significant amount of games every season now. He's getting just a little bit less effective every year. LeBron obviously is 38, 30, going to be 39. You can't rely on his level of play forever. I don't know if anyone's around to really challenge Durant. I don't trust any of those fuckers in the East until they actually grow some balls. Because all three of them teams are soft as hell.
Oh, you know, I completely agree. I mean, the Bucks did the they did the right thing and moved on from their coach, because that was a team that was out coached in many situations. So when you have the best, you know, Giannis is one of the best players. He's almost elite, right? He's on his way.
The jury might be still out, according to some people.
Yeah, but they definitely made the right move there. So we'll see if that ends up paying more in the X's and O's parts of the games where the games seem to get away from them late, close games. So it makes sense that you would make that move. It's like, oh, no, he won the title. That's okay. Yeah. Joe Madden won a title, too. He tried to
lose. There's a lot of NBA champions that found themselves out of jobs not long afterwards. The guy in Toronto was fired after winning a title. It's the thing that happens. You win a title and you get fired. I guess
you don't win and then they fire you right away.
There's a precipitous fall after that has happened to several guys.
But I have here in front of me, since we were talking about it, the list of, based off of sources across the web, the 42 most famous Denver Nuggets. And, ooh, boy. we did have, I'm just looking at what we had. You had Carmelo, Melo, right?
Yep.
And Alex English and Jokic. And Michael Adams was on the list. And so was, you brought up Kiki Vandeweghe.
Yeah.
But just to show you how much of a poverty franchise this has been, when you hear some of the names in the top 42, like Rafe LaFrentz.
Rafe LaFrentz? Holy shit.
Yeah. Mason Plumlee.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. They even put Allen Iverson on here.
Oh, the long storied Nuggets career of Allen Iverson.
Allen Iverson. So even people who were just tangentially connected to the team or played or had a cup of coffee get on this list. So that just kind of tells you how Nurkic is on here. Timothy Mozgov.
Oh, oh my goodness. Yeah.
And I remember, I actually remember him. Earl Boykins.
Eastern Michigan point guard. I think I can win this game. Hang on. Wait a minute.
Your boy, Paul Millsap.
Oh, God. I forgot where he went to school. But, yeah, he was there.
Yeah, your boy Fat Lever is on here. Antonio McDice.
Antonio McDice was a beast, man. He didn't play very long. But, man, he was a power dunker. And, man, what a great athlete. He just got hurt all the time.
Nene, how we somehow missed him.
Oh, the great Nene Hilario from Brazil.
Nene Hilario. So.
Yeah. There's not a lot of NBA Hall of Famers.
No, the long and storied career of Chauncey Billups on the Denver Nuggets.
That's an original, too. I believe they drafted him number three
Kenyon
overall.
Martin, did play for them for quite a few seasons. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, these are tough.
Yeah, half of those I forgot played for the Nuggets. I honestly forgot about them.
Dan Issel,
Prince. Yeah, that's kind of an obvious one. Was the original from the ABA? Yep.
Kembe Mutombo.
That should have been obvious too, because he's the author of the first HC DeBeto 1. Because I remember him laughing with the ball on the floor as the Nuggets upset Rain Man and the glove in the Supersonics. That was the first 8
cool.
over 1
there you
in
go.
NBA history.
All right. So
now, who else was on that team with him? I have no idea.
Again, poverty franchise. And
yes.
Then, yeah. but we can't take it away. I mean, they had the best player on the court in every series that they played, and it showed.
And, again, not trying to, you know, shit on it, but it's just – you think about how random it is that they got lucky and found this fat guy in the second round that they –
who clearly just does not give two shits about anything.
No, he's just doing his job and going home.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. I'm good at this. And this is what I punch in and I go to work and I punch out and
that's about it. And
it's
if
about
the Utah
workmanlike MVP that you can have.
If the Utah Jazz would have got lucky and drafted him in the second round, then we'd be sitting here talking about who's the most famous Utah Jazz of all time after Stockton and Malone.
Byron Russell.
There's not too many guys after him.
Pete Hornacek.
Yeah. Oh, Jeff Hornacek, yeah.
Jeff Hornacek. Pete Hornacek. Jeff Hornacek. Pretty much just those 90s teams. It's just, that's the top.
Right.
The top, yeah.
All those guys in the finals. All those guys that you saw play, getting beat by Jordan 2 years in a row. All those guys.
Yeah. Those guys are all the top players for the Utah Jazz.
And
Kirilenko.
Oh, AK-47. Kirilenko was the man. I'm pretty sure their franchise score before Malone came along was
Jerry Sloan.
I don't think it was Sloan, but that's another one.
He
did play for the Bulls. And he coached. That's where I got good.
He was the all-time right. He was the coach. He's an all-timer.
Adrian Dantley was the name I was trying to come
right.
up with, but I promise you, my wife hasn't heard of him either.
But it's terrible when we think of the Utah Jazz, all we can think of is Stockton and Malone.
That's pretty. That's a pretty dominant duo. If you're going to have a franchise dominant duo, and they probably were good enough to lead them to a championship. That duo, except for Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and the Bulls.
Yeah, that happened. That happened to a lot of people.
It did.
Yeah, it's funny. Stockton, Malone, Adrian Dantley are the top three when I looked it up.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the second, and then it's, yeah, Jeff Hornacek, Andre Kirilenko, and then
the void.
Oh, man. Thurl Bailey.
Thurl! My guy.
Greg Ostertag.
Oh, my God.
Do you remember him?
But again, off the 90s, off the 90s Jazz.
Yeah, Carlos Boozer, Mark Eaton.
Oh, big Mark Eaton.
Mount Eaton.
Yep.
So,
big
this is
7'4"
fun.
Bastard.
But,
name random Western Conference players.
Yeah, name the best players on poverty franchises.
We welcome you to the 1980s NBA Western Conference episode of Kings of Non-Sequitur. We didn't know it was going to break down into that. But that's why it's Kings of Non-Sequitur, because you
exactly
never know where
right.
It's going
to go. Hey, we are giving the flowers to the Denver Nuggets, and it's not like there's a whole lot of other things that you can say than Jokic was the man, and so we got to fill the time. That's it.
The world champion Denver Nuggets. We're giving them their flowers in our own roundabout way.
Yeah.
I can fill in the last eight live minutes rambling about music. That might put you to sleep, but that's the risk that we take, unless you had anything else you wanted to get off your chest.
No.
Sirius XM. Do you have Sirius or?
I did many, many years ago. I remember when Sirius and XM, I had it so long ago that they were two separate companies.
That it was XM and also Sirius.
Because there was XM Radio and Sirius,
yep.
You know, and now they're the same. But, I had XM
merged,
Radio
yep.
Very long time ago. And funny thing about XM Radio was their playlists were so, like, tuned in that you could set your clock to them.
Oh, wow, really?
Oh, yeah. Like, if a certain song would come on a certain channel, you'd be like, oh, it's 3:45.
Wow.
You don't
okay.
need to don't need clocks, watches. It was pretty bad. but there's so many music services now. So you have a story specifically about satellite radio. Or Sirius XM.
About Sirius XM, who's been combining with Billboard magazine to create these top 500 channels where you tune in. It is not by, you don't set your clock by, you don't tune in at 3:00 and they're up to number 50. But you check in whenever you check in, and whatever they happen to be at that time that you check in, that's where you pick it up. Mass confusion for me. I don't understand these ratings. I don't know how they come up with these top 500s. So this started with a 1980s top 580 songs of all time. You talk about right up my alley, right? Really up both of our alleys.
Yeah.
So I was very much looking forward to hearing where some of the great songs landed and going back and hearing some songs maybe I hadn't heard in a long time. And maybe a couple of songs maybe I'd never heard that would get their flowers, which happened. But, boy, how they made the list, I have no idea. And how they make the decision for some of these songs, I have no idea. Now, this list, as it turned out, I was so baffled by some of these decisions that I actually went online to look, okay, how did they come up? And I guess that particular countdown or list was, like, old. It came out, like, 3 or 4 years ago. So that's how I was able to go actually see the whole list, 1 through 500, instead of what I was doing was clicking in, you know, every day at a different time. And, oh, there's number 470. And now the next day, here's number 290. And it was, like, frustrating because I wanted to know, you know, of course, I wanted to know what the top ones were. And I could never seem to get in when they were up to the top 10, but finally I did. But anyway, I was basically, my attitude about it was I wasn't going to have too big of a problem at all with the list so long as Billie Jean came in somewhere like top three, top five, should be
so
number
that
one,
was,
right?
That's what you were invested in.
That was the thing that I, to me, is what made whatever legitimacy or credibility for the list. Anything else was sort of fair game, but you got to have Billie Jean somewhere in your top three, or else the list doesn't really, it's kind of invalid to me, because by any metric, is there any other song that you could think of that would be considered the number one pop song or the number one song of the 80s? Now, maybe I should have asked you that before I mentioned Billie Jean, because I kind of poisoned your pool there.
Yeah, so I can't. So yes, it's hard to say a number one because there were so many huge hits in the 80s. So, all right, where are you going with this?
Billie Jean was number 17. The number 17 song of the 1980s? Really?
I need to know what the 16 in front of it were.
Now you're going to make me go find it again. Hang on. And honestly, I didn't have a problem like with the top five. Like every song in the top five, I was like, okay, I get that.
So you would have been fine. So what you're saying is you would have been okay if it was six based off of the list.
I guess.
Like if it was six and then the top five came
and then
in,
the
you
top
were like,
five,
yeah,
I
okay,
didn't have a problem
right.
with,
be,
right.
You would so. Kind of begrudgingly give it to those. And
yeah, I guess. But yeah, going into it, I was thinking number one, definitely, and it's got to be top three or else it's not even legit. 17 blew me away when they came with 17. That's kind of like the beginning of my grievances that I'm about to air here.
Okay,
but now I'm getting caught up trying to find the list again.
I was about to say, because this is where we could have the styles clash, because you know there may be some I agree with.
Sure. When I get to the list, we'll see how you feel about it. Okay, here's the list.
All right.
Did you want to guess at the top five? Cause
no.
It's really hard to, almost impossible to guess the
so
top five.
So you're going 16 up to one, or are you going one to 16?
I'll be Casey Kasem. I'll count them down from 16 to one.
Okay.
All right.
This is going to carry us into the after show, folks. So.
It is. We're live, and we got 2 minutes and 20 seconds to go, so there's
so
no
folks,
way.
You need to subscribe to us on the iTunes or your favorite podcasting app.
Exactly.
So here's
wherever
where
you
we're going.
Listen to podcasts to get the after show. So
that's
where
right.
this is headed. Here we go. Number 16, Diana Ross, Upside Down.
No.
Not greater
nope.
than Billie Jean. I completely
Out.
Concur.
Okay.
I completely agree.
So far, we are one for one.
At number 15, That's What Friends Are For, Dionne Warwick and Friends.
Oh, hell no. No. No, and if We Are the World is on there, that's out too.
I mean, it was We Are the World was huge, and I would understand it. I know We Are the World is somewhere on the list, but I don't think it's higher than
okay.
these songs. I think it
yeah,
was.
Yeah, so far, no and no.
Okay. 15. That was 15. 14. Oh my God. You're really going to love this one. Remember Ebony and Ivory?
Oh my God.
Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder. I hadn't heard. Heard that song in
I mean I remember
years.
It and I remember their terrible music video for it and
that's the 14th greatest song in the
no
according to
no I wouldn't even no that's not top that's not no that's not it's not a top
right,
20 hit.
We're not doing the Luis Arise. We're not betting well here. We're 0-3. We're not getting any hits so far, greater than Billie Jean. And number 13, I Love Rock and Roll, Joan Jett.
I mean, it's going to – I'm going to say no, but it's closer.
Okay. At least we're getting closer. We're getting warm.
I mean, yeah, like, okay, still not – still not, in my mind, a bigger hit or a better song or more substantial for the time, but definitely, and that's an early 80s hit, so that's something that people don't always quote-unquote think of as 80s, you know?
Okay. We're getting even earlier, because that's 82, according to January 20th, 82, according to this list. We're going even further back for most of the rest of the top 10 here. Number 12. I never even heard this song. John Lennon, Just Like Starting Over.
No.
The number 12 greatest song of the 1980s.
No.
Have you heard that song? Oh, okay.
Yeah, but it didn't really, you know, it's not like, oh, stop the radio dial.
I don't know about that. I'm as big of an 80s music nut as there gets. I don't know if I'd ever heard that song before. All right. Number 11, at least I've heard the song. J. Geils Band, Centerfold.
Okay, that's a big one. What number is this?
That was 11.
Okay.
That was just outside the top 10.
And that's a huge song. I'd say it's equal.
To Billie Jean? Okay.
That was a huge song.
No, it was a huge smash from October of 81. All right, let's move to the top 10. Let's see what you feel about these.
Okay. This is where it gets,
number 10.
Because if there's stuff in the top 10 where I'm like, oh, hell no, get it out of there, you know, that's not good.
We'll see what you feel about it. At number 10, Lady, Kenny Rogers.
No. I got nothing against Kenny Rogers, but no. Kenny Rogers does not get a top 10 song of the 80s. Sorry, wrong decade.
All right, that's a and number 9, Blondie, Call Me.
Huge song.
Number 9. I think this was one of the days where I came in to the car and turned it on and heard Call Me, and I was like, yeah, Call Me.
That's
got to
be
song.
Like, hey, what is this, number 45? Where
right,
are
right.
This,
I'm like,
all
know?
Right,
we got to be in about to the 200, 150, whatever. Yeah. Number 9, what? Number 9 of all the 80s? Number 8, oh my God. Say, Paul McCartney and Michael Jackson.
Man, somebody's got a hard-on for the Beatles.
Number 8?
No.
Oh.
And again, not a great song.
Right, I remember it as a corny-ass song, like, who remembers that song? It's something great.
Just like Ebony and Ivory.
Right, right. Ebony and Ivory,
corny.
I'm like, really?
Well, they also have the That's What Friends Are For. This is some cheese ball shit that they're putting in their top 20.
Well, they tried to go hard at 7 and stick one in there. We're both huge, huge fans of number 7. Queen, another one, Bites the Dust.
Yeah, that one's hard to...
Yeah. That's a big one.
I gotta give it to that. That's a big one.
We both love that one.
That's gotta be like 80 or 81.
Yep, August 1980.
Yeah.
So number 6, it was huge. It was the number 1. Like I said, I didn't have a problem with the top 5. Number 6, I was like, I don't know about that. Number 6, Irene Cara, Flashdance. But I feel it. It was everywhere.
It was, but number 6 of the decade?
Right. Like, really? 6? It was pretty big, though. All right. And 5 through 1 were all huge, and I can't really argue with any of them. 5, Every Breath You Take, The Police.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Kinda obvious. Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Checking.
4.
So
Survivor.
A song,
I Am a Tiger.
Oh my God! Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a song in my head that I would be shocked if it's not on this list. So.
it's going to be on the list somewhere.
No,
500.
No.
So you're talking about the top
group.
The remaining top three
for huge '80s hits, and I'm just curious to see if this song, because it popped into my head here, like, where's that? You know.
All right, we got three left.
Three left.
Did you want to throw that guess out there and spoil it, or do you want to keep going with the countdown?
Say Jack and Diane.
Jack and Diane, not in the top 17.
That is shocking.
It was huge. It was very big.
Some of the crap that's on that list, and that's not even a song I like. I'm not a big John Cougar guy, but that song was massive.
It was massive. John Cougar checked in. That defines the 80s, right?
That was 80s. That was like any, like, that had that same airplay, like, you know, you think
sure.
of the like Madonna and Michael Jackson, mm-hmm. and Huey Lewis and all those people, like, that dominated the 80s. That song was right up there.
This is why I'm having such a problem with this list. It really drove me nuts when I was listening. Cause I'm like, how is that up there? And how is this one down there?
Or Tina Turner.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you just think of these artists that dominated the decade, and we're missing a whole lot of them. But we got a whole hell of a lot of Paul McCartney.
I broke off to look up for some John Mellencamp. I broke off briefly for that. John Cougar checks in at 22, and it's not even Jack and Diane. That's Hurt So Good.
Okay, that was big too.
Yes, Jack and Diane checked in.
But definitely, in my mind, if I'm making that list, it's the lesser of the two.
Right. They're huge. They're both huge to me. I don't think I could differentiate.
Yeah, those are monsters. That's what I mean. So it's why it's so hard to make a list like this. It's like whenever you talk about the GOAT of something, because now you're getting so subjective.
So I'm driving myself crazy over something but my point is, it's partnered with Billboard. There's supposed to be a rhyme and reason to it. It's supposed to be, is it a chart? Is it how long you were on the chart? Is it how many weeks you were at number one? What's the
criteria here? Because I can tell you another one bites the dust and Call Me were not dominating.
I don't think either one of them got to
number
ones. I don't think they got to number one. And the John Lennon song, I've never heard of
it. That's what I mean. But that's
what the hell.
That's what I mean.
Never
that's why this
heard
list
of
is,
it.
It's shocking.
Oh,
I will tell you, there's probably more quality songs down in the 40s and 50s than
in the 400s.
Some of the ones that we've pulled out here in the teens. So we've top three now, right? Top three?
And I was cleaning up the Jack and Diane query. It came in at 41, ironically, one spot behind We Are the World.
Oh.
At 40.
Okay. We're just nailing them tonight.
The number three was cheesy as hell, but it was a massive hit. Endless Love, Diana Ross and Lionel Richie. Yeah, top three of all the entire 80s. I'm pretty sure it was number one. It was a huge hit, but not one of my favorites for sure.
Okay.
Number two was a huge number one. Betty Davis Eyes, Kim Carnes.
That was number two?
Yeah, of all the 80s, number two. It was big.
Yeah.
And number one was big, and it was the number one song of that year, 81, I believe. But even still, to be labeled number one of the 80s kind of knocked me out the car. I almost drove off the road. Number one of all the 80s, gold, Olivia Newton-John. The number one song of all the 80s.
No.
What's that based on? I have no idea.
That is an awful list.
But I would just love to know what the rationale is. Like, what's this based on exactly? But to put Billboard's name in it, to give it that kind of, you know, legitimacy, right? That's what made me think, okay, this is going to be good, because this isn't going to be, you know, Joe Schmo's most favorited songs today. This isn't going to be Bon Jovi all up and down, right? It's actually going to be based on something substantial, something, you know, the biggest chart toppers. And like, that's why the top five, I didn't really have an argument because they were all humongous chart toppers and like number one for like 6-7 weeks and shit. Right. So I get that. But even still, how is Billie Jean 17? That was number one for a good 5 or 6 weeks, I believe. Because I remember listening to Casey Kasem back then and being, I still remember this. I still remember being stunned the night that I turned on the top 40 countdown and Billie Jean had gotten knocked out of number one, and I will never forget it, by Come On Eileen. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? That's number one now?
Yeah, no.
So, and I don't even know where Come On Eileen is on this list. It's on the list somewhere, but just some of these songs, like the John Lennon song still blows me away at number 12. I'd never heard of it in my damn life. Anyway, I have a lot more grievances. I'll try not to go for another hour about it. But another grievance I had about the list was there was a song. I don't know where it is on the list. I could search for it. There's another Kenny Rogers song, ironically, that I had a problem with. I had never heard of before either, but it was like down in the 400s or 300s. But the song, it was called Coward of the County.
Oh, now, yeah, hell yeah.
Now, oh, you know that song?
Oh, of course.
I can't tell when you're...
That's a revenge title. That is a messed up song.
It is. That's my I've never heard of it in my life, right?
Oh, no, wow. No, I know that song.
Okay. I can't tell when you're joking sometimes. I listened to the song, and I was like,
singing the chorus right now, but I won't.
I was like, this is horrifying. This is it is definitely a revenge song about a guy who promised his father that he would not be violent until his girlfriend got gang raped by three dudes. So like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
So that's depressing as fuck. That was like this, like I said, I never heard of it. And to have it as one of the top songs of the '80s and to, you know, for that particular subject matter and that, I'm like, this is crazy, man. That just threw me out. Like the next song after that was like something really upbeat, like Billy Ocean or something. And I'm like, that doesn't go for, but you're not supposed to put the list together, to, you know, trying to match up songs and make it flow like that. It's supposed to be a ranking system. That's, I guess, my whole thing about how do you get the rankings? How do you make, I could not make sense of why some songs made it this high and other songs made it that high and other songs made it on the list that I'd never heard of. And I just, okay. So I'm not done. So that was the 80s list. Now for Black Music Month, did you know June is Black Music Month? Don't worry about it, because neither did I.
No.
Yeah, I had no idea either. Anyway, June is Black Music Month. They did a serious Billboard Top 500 R&B songs of all time list, right? This isn't top R&B songs of the 80s. This is top R&B songs of all time.
All time.
I would love to know how they came up with that list. I don't know the number one. I haven't been able to click in to where they've been doing the top 10. I think I got to the 20s, but I don't know the top 15, top 10 songs. I don't know what the hell could possibly be number one. I know it's not Billie Jean, because again, they've already gotten through Billie Jean. They already played that like in the 20s somewhere. I don't know why they don't respect Billie Jean, I guess, the way I did. I always thought Billie Jean was like by far the number one song of the 80s.
Where's Prince?
Dotting the list here and there, up and down, but not as high as a Prince fan like me would probably put him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just monster hits.
That 80s list, his highest is When Doves Cry is 26.
Sure. That makes sense.
One spot behind Like a Virgin, which is fine, but two spots behind Do That to Me One More Time by Captain and Tennille, which is not fine. I was not okay with that at all. Yeah, very, very dubious. Very, very dubious.
Yeah, I noticed I was looking at the list. I actually brought up the list, and it is very... The top 100 is very heavy in the first half of that decade.
Yeah.
Like, people stopped listening to music in 1986.
Apparently.
And made that list.
They had to fit Janet Jackson in there, Miss You Much, and they had to fit George Michael in there in the second half of the 80s. Other than that, yes, it's pretty much all before 85. But all, you know, for the most part, great songs. So understandable. But I just would love to know the rationale behind some of those rankings. My grievance about the R&B list so far, that from what I've heard, there's another problematic song at number 401 that actually the song, I meant to look that up before the show started too, but I can do that right now. But basically the song, the lyric went something like, if you want to be happy, fellas, what you got to do, get an ugly girl to marry you. It's like, say what? What are you talking about? So they're trying to cover like all the history of rock and roll music or R&B music. So these are songs from like the 60s all the way up to now that they're trying to put in some sort of order. And that's my grievance with that is I don't understand the rationale behind some of that. I don't know how they come up with some of these orders or some of these, like how do you get to one song from Marvin Gaye and the next song above him is by T-Pain. Like that literally happened this morning.
I'm looking at the list right now, so I don't know.
Do you know the list?
Yeah.
I know. No, I don't.
Do you want the list? What do you want?
Sure.
I'll give it to you. All right. What would you like? Top 20?
Yeah, because I think that's about where I stopped off.
Okay. So this is their R&B list. So all of these, if any of these songs were in the 80s, most of these would be better than what was on the other list. This is like Murderer's Row. So it's a lot of good songs here, but some of them you'll be like, not so sure that's the one you picked. But
yeah,
20 is Think by Aretha Franklin, you know, the queen of soul.
Oh, okay. I guess I hadn't got to the top 20 because I haven't heard that yet.
Yeah. I mean,
okay,
makes sense.
But yeah, Monster, sure.
19, Oh Girl by the Chi Lights.
I will spare you singing that one. Yeah, big hit. Okay. Yeah.
18, a little song you might know called Purple Rain.
I may have heard of that, yes.
Yeah, that's top 20. Now, that is not... The thing is about that song, my remembering of that song, is that was not like your top 40 songs.
No.
It was too long.
Right.
And
two,
it was
too
really,
depressing.
That song did not play in the rotation.
It was not I don't think it was a single. I don't think he ever released that as a single.
Right.
But it's iconic anyway because it's a great
right.
song.
Which is how many, but you think about how many songs that never really were released as a single have that kind of staying
sure.
power. And well, there is, it's Purple Rain. 17 is Anytime by Brian McKnight.
See, now, think about all the Marvin Gaye. Think about the Aretha Franklin, Whitney Houston, Marvin. That's the number 17 greatest R&B song of all time.
So far, that's the first one I've had a problem with.
Yeah. Like, come on. Good song, too, but come on.
16, My Lovin' and Vogue.
Again, I love that song.
It's catchy as hell.
Yeah. But of all time? Okay. All right.
All time. 15, Ain't No Sunshine. The Withers.
I'm you singing that one too.
I mean, come on, that's got to be on the list.
Huge song.
Yeah. So I, yeah, no problem. 14, Shaft.
Okay. And with that, I know it got to number one on the Billboard chart. So
sure,
that I can certainly. Not only is it catchy as hell and you know culturally a huge hit, but it even went to number one on the pop charts. So yeah, can't deny, can't argue the power of that.
Number 13, Ooh Baby, Smokey Robinson and the Miracles.
Kind of hard to argue the how big that was. That was everywhere.
It's changing gears though. And 12 is Never Too Much, Luther Vandross.
Okay. Love the song. Like, iconic song.
Is that even his best song?
12? Best song?
Is that,
I don't know, but
iconic song? Or
it's in the, yeah, it's in the conversation. But again, that of all time is doing the work here. That just kind of makes me reel and fall back, like, because I think about listening to that in 82 when it came out, and this is going to be one of the greatest R&B songs of all time. I don't know about that. I mean, it's huge. It's huge. I just kind of, it's not a huge argument. It's more of a quibble.
Okay, so you're not totally outright rejecting it. You're just like, maybe you have more of a seating problem, I think, here.
Yeah, it's hard to put that as above, you know, there's a whole lot of songs that it's above that I don't think I would put above it.
Okay, so you're the Prince guy.
Okay, yeah.
Because we already had Purple Rain at 18. Well, at 11, they have I Want to Be Your Lover.
Really?
And you're the Prince guy, so I defer to the expert. I mean, you did like 6 hours on Prince one night.
It wasn't about 6 hours. It was
okay. Four and a half.
It was an hour and 10 minutes. I intended to be 15 and turned it to 70. That is a massive amount of respect for a song that probably didn't get into the top 10 of the pop hits at the time.
Well, think
no
about
knew
well,
who he
yeah,
was.
Both of these. One, his number 18 on the of all
well,
time.
Well, Purple Rain clearly
aired,
didn't because it wasn't a single. Yeah,
never released as a single.
Yeah.
And number 11, not even close to being one of his most recognizable songs.
It's exactly like Never Too Much. It's his first huge hit. It's the hit that people say, oh, wow, what's that talent? Who is that? But to say one of, you know, greatest of all time, I don't know if I buy that. And I'm a huge Prince fan, so of course I would be biased towards him. But of all time, that's hard to imagine. Great song. I love I Want to Be Your Lover, of course. But I don't know. So I'm assuming that's his highest ranking song.
Yeah, that's the last time he appears. He is not in the top 10.
So you think about...
It's not in the top 10.
You think about Let's Go Crazy, When Doves Cry, Controversy.
Yeah, Little Red Corvette.
Oh, my God.
1999.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's a lot of songs that I think should be above I Want to Be Your Lover. But
well, like, get your ass out of here.
Okay. All right. We made it to the top 10.
And actually, I'm looking farther down. I don't think none of those are even in the top 100.
I don't understand. I just don't understand the methodology. Okay.
Unless I missed something. Nope, didn't miss anything. It's not even in the top 100. Let's see here. 10. This is your top 10 all time. So you...
Top 10 R&B songs of all time.
Now, somebody did take... I found as I was searching through this, somebody did take...
John Lennon.
Paul McCartney.
oh, God.
Dionne Warwick. No, she's not in the top 10. Close the Door.
Oh,
my boy,
Daddy.
Teddy Pendergrass.
Okay, see, I can't. That song is too, even more than Prince almost, is too close to my heart for me to put it down in any way. Like, that is iconic. Teddy. Man, that is that's going back to I'm so little. I'm in the back seat of my parents' car listening to some Close the Door there. So, yeah, I'm not going to argue with that one.
Okay, so far you're okay. Not number 9, and again, this, when you hear the song and the artist, you're going to go, well, wait a minute, where are all the other songs by that artist?
Okay.
And it's your girl. Mariah Carey, We Belong Together.
Humongous number one hit, her big comeback hit after she had kind of fallen off and started having some erratic behavior. This was her massive comeback, Emancipation of Mimi.
Is this after
huge
all
hit.
The, is this after all the TV specials with the high school football teams?
You lost me on that one.
Remember that one?
Oh, with the high school football teams?
Yeah, or like a video. It was creepy. That's all I remember.
Oh. It was after all the number one hits had stopped, had dried up, basically. And it was like, oh, is she done? Has she, you know, like 10 or 11 number ones in a row, which is a hell of a run. But then she started having some duds. And it was like, she might be finished. And then she hits with that one. And that was number one for, God, probably about 8 or 9 weeks on the charts, on the pop chart, not the R&B charts, too. I heard a whole bunch of Mariah songs today because I was listening from about 150 to 100-ish, and it was like three of them or four in there in the top 200 to 100, something like that. So they represent a lot of Mariah, but it was a lot of the early stuff. I heard Vision of Love today. I heard Someday. I heard I may have heard something else this morning by her. I heard Hero. And I might have even heard something.
Yeah, like that. I mean, it's all so again, I'm looking at this top 10, and I think it's more just artists, you know,
instead of just the biggest songs.
There's one, two, there's a few of these where the song is the obvious song for the artist, and some of them where you're just like, just pick whatever you want.
All right, it's a huge artist. But that's kind of my thing. Like, the top 50 hits of the 80s, like 10 of them should be Madonna, 12 of them should be Michael Jackson, 10 of them should be Prince, because it's the biggest of the 80s. And,
right.
And 8 of them should be Whitney Houston. And then all the and take Paul McCartney and John Lennon and throw them the fuck out of there, because they were not huge stars of the 80s. I understand they're the Beatles. But they were not the humongous stars of the 80s at all.
No. We talked about those.
Yeah.
Or even people who had those, like, that had the huge chunk of the 80s, right? And then as you started to get into the back half of the decade, it started to become like, you know, George Michael and all those types of bands. And,
yep.
You know, and then you had people, like, sprinkled through. I mean...
Yeah, U2
Phil
started
Collins.
Up in the second half of the
Phil
80s.
Every
Genesis,
couple of
Phil
years
Collins.
Popped up with a number one hit.
Right, by himself. Then he'd go back to Genesis and they'd
pop out another
off,
number one.
Pop off in Invisible Touch, which is number one in 87, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Mariah, is that the highest Mariah song? Cause
it's the last one, 9.
I don't know how many weeks that was number one on the overall Billboard chart. I'm not talking about R&B, but One Sweet Day by Boyz II Men was number one for like 16 weeks. It was the record holder. It was literally the longest running number one song, pop song of all time. And now I think it's tied with Lil Nas' Old Town Road. But where in the hell is One Sweet Day? And then that almost goes into another grievance I had separately, which is a lot of those songs that I was hearing were like pop or country songs that just happened to be done by black people. And that's why they could put them on the R&B list. Like the first song I turned on yesterday on the list was Save the Best for Last by Vanessa Williams, which if that was sung by Jewel would sound exactly the same and wouldn't be on the R&B list because it would be sung by a white girl. But because it was Vanessa Williams, they put it on there. There's nothing R&B about that song.
Did,
that was a pop song.
She did belt the hell out of that song, though.
But if Cher or Jewel would have belted the hell out of it, it would have sounded exactly the same. There was nothing
correct
about that song that was like specific to Vanessa Williams' voice. And
well,
hell,
what? You're on a roll. I don't want to cut you off.
No, I'm sputtering. I'm trying to think of the Whitney Houston huge hit, I Will Always Love You, which was a monster, which is also not an R&B song.
Yeah.
That's a country song. Dolly Parton wrote that song.
Mm-hmm.
So there's now that she belted the hell out of. I understand that. But my point is, what's R&B and what's not? Like, is it R&B if a black person sings it, no matter how it sounds? Because that's a whole nother...
I wonder.
That's another grievance I had. But anyway, we're on to number 8, I believe.
I don't know if this is...
can't believe we're going to make a two-hour show out of this.
You'll have to tell me if this is too low at number 8.
Okay.
Superstition.
Number 8? I heard something Stevie Wonder on one of the countdowns. So maybe I heard something else and thought it was Superstition. But I thought I already heard that.
But for Stevie Wonder, they clearly got the song right, I think.
Stevie, that's just like Prince and Michael Jackson. Like there's 20 songs you could pick and you wouldn't be
right.
Wrong.
But if somebody was to put the gun to my head and make me pick one, that's the one I'd pick.
Okay.
Might not be the one you pick. I don't know.
I don't disagree. I do not argue with superstition.
Okay. So that was one of the few where I was like, yeah, that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So 7, and this is the Mariah Carey problem. It's Whitney Houston.
Okay.
And right, and now you just reach into the bag and pull out a name of a song. And they picked Saving All My Love for You.
Over
everything else.
Right. But especially over And I Will Always Love You, which was everywhere.
All time.
Yeah, that's that of all time phrase is doing a lot of work when you talk about, like, because, you know, just sitting there hearing the song as a child and thinking greatest of all time. No, I wasn't. It was big. It was great. The greatest of all time. I don't know. I don't think it's egregious. I'll say that. Like,
okay,
it's not,
so you're not turning your nose up at it or anything.
On the John Lennon song I've never heard of scale, it doesn't rate up there.
Come and see number 6. It's a man's man. Right. It's a man's man's world.
Oh.
James Brown.
Really? That's another one. James Brown. Pick, you know,
just reach into the hat and pick out a song.
I Feel Good. Please, please, please.
Yeah, how is that over I Feel Good?
I don't know. I have no idea.
Which is like, isn't that the James Brown song?
I would probably argue that. I don't know. And I know It's a Man's World could not have possibly been like top of the pop charts or anything like that. So just again, the rationale is what I'm confused about. Like, how do you come up with that? James Brown in the top R&B artist of all time. Okay, completely
got
understood.
It.
That song? How did you come up with
right, if somebody
song?
Said that these were the top 10 artists,
yeah.
You're not actually going to have a whole lot of like fighting if I took even this top 20 and we picked out these names. I was like, yeah, I get that. That makes sense.
But just those specific songs, though, that's just...
Well, prepare to be infuriated, because
uh-oh.
Michael Jackson is number 5.
Uh-huh.
Rock With You.
What?
Makes no sense. There might be 20 songs that I would
not
think of.
Not Thriller.
Before
not,
that.
Not anything off of Thriller. Not a game. Not anything off of Thriller, but okay. And that's his highest rated?
It's not Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, even.
but that is his highest rated song on the list?
Yes.
Wow. Oh, God, over Billie Jean.
Wow.
Over,
that's
okay.
All you can say. Wow.
All right.
That'll look good on the quotes. Wow.
Wow.
Andre. End of the Road is number 4 for Boyz II Men.
Okay. Humongous. No argument.
Okay. You're not fighting with that one.
No, not my favorite. Just too maudlin, but
too big.
Understandable.
Too big to fail. Al Green.
Stay together.
Three. Let's stay together. There you go.
Not going to argue with that.
All right.
See, quintessential
easy.
R&B.
Number two, Aretha.
Like anything Aretha, I'm not going to really argue with number two, but what did they pick?
It's respect.
Okay, yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Either that or Natural Woman, but yeah, okay.
And at number one, if it was the white man's version of this song, it would be, hey, what happened? But it's what's going on.
Hey, what happened? Hey, what happened? Hey, what happened? Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So you say, okay, it's Marvin Gaye. Then you just, okay, what song is it? Okay, I'm good with that one.
Yeah. and especially that one, all the social.
That's the big one. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
That's got all the social commentary. That's got everything in it, right?
It's got everything except like how long it was on the pop charts. I don't think it was up there that long, but like R&B, okay,
So you warmed to the like it's just like with the other one, you kind of warmed up to the top of the list, but before
right.
that, you're just like, what's going on? You're picking the right artists, but you're picking the wrong songs.
Yeah, and that's my just the rationale. How do you arrive at that? Like, how did you choose this? And I would love to know the process behind that. That's my biggest complaint about the whole thing. I had some other minor complaints that I listed most of them already. That's kind of how I feel about the top of that list. Is yeah, I get it. I understand. Okay. Yes.
I'm looking for like the big ones down the list that I know. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm just looking at the top 100 here. So I'm like, okay, these are like big songs, big songs that even I know, you know.
Right.
And, oh, man, Celebration is at 33. That's a huge song.
Sure.
Your girl Janet, That's the Way Love Goes, 32.
Yep, I heard that earlier, so that's about where I left off when I went
Midnight
home.
Midnight Train to Georgia?
Yep, I heard that.
39? Oh, man, If You Don't Know Me By Now. Holy crap. 44, that's you know. There's Prince again, Kiss, 47.
That was a huge hit. Dude. But there's so many others.
There's
you
Luther Here
one?
And Now,
okay.
54.
Yep, huge, yep.
Yeah, just Stand By Me. Oh, yeah, 61.
That's kind of huge.
61?
Yeah.
Let's see here. No, Blurred Lines, get that off the list. Get that off the list.
Oh, I'm glad I didn't hear that because I would have yelled out at my job like, what the hell?
Man, even I know, get that off the list.
So another complaint I have.
Heard it through the grapevine? Ooh.
Kind of big.
85?
Right, of all time. When you think of some of the others above that.
85?
That's 85.
Oh,
right.
Use me.
Yeah.
Like,
come
I'm
on.
The only white guy driving down the road in the middle of the night blasting that song in a U-Haul. Oh, remember that.
I'm sure you weren't the only one, but yeah.
86.
Iconic.
Monster song. That's what I think of when I think of that genre of music.
Yeah, quintessential R&B, absolutely.
Yeah. More than Blurred Lines.
Right. Just, like, really?
Get out of here.
So they get to like...
Barry White. Never Gonna Give You Up.
Yeah, baby.
94.
So they got to like 139 or something this morning when I was listening, and they decided to play A Short Memory of Whitney Houston.
Huh?
And so then they played about 15 seconds of So Emotional, and then they moved down to 138.
What? Okay.
Winning the game 72-71.
You're not on a radio station. You're not having commercial breaks. What are you saving time for? Why would you play 15 seconds of a song on this big-ass top 500 list and then move on to the next song? What was the rationale behind that? I was like, why did you do that? I mean, I that completely blew me away. So they actually did that a couple of times on the R&B countdown. They didn't, I don't think they ever did that on the 80s one that I listened to. But they did it a couple more times on this R&B one, because there's another point where there was two Mariah Carey songs in a row, and they played one of them for like 10 seconds, and then they played the other one, the whole song. I almost understand that. Like, if you got an artist two times in a row, then maybe you don't want to play that artist back-to-back. However, they did it with Lionel Richie. Lionel Richie had two songs back-to-back at some point, and they played both of them full length. So I don't understand that. And then that rationale didn't make sense, because they played his biggest hit all night long, and then the next song after that was Say You Say Me. How the hell do you put All Night Long behind Say You Say Me? There's no
might
way
as well have
hell.
Put it. They might as well have played the next song and had that been like Dancing on the Ceiling.
Yeah, which I think they did on the 80s countdown. I think they had Lionel Richie back-to-back there and Dancing on the Ceiling and something else. But how in the hell do you rationalize putting All Night Long behind any other Lionel Richie song? To me, there's no other Lionel Richie song you could put up above that. Maybe
Hello?
Maybe Hello. Maybe. But All Night Long was number one for a long time. That was the top song of the year of 84, 85, whatever year that came out. I think that was the number one song of that year. So that's why I don't.
Yeah, that was
I don't understand
hit.
That. Huge. So yeah, that's just some of the decisions that they made. I didn't quite understand.
Well, what I find interesting is that somebody has taken these lists and put them in like Spotify playlists.
Okay. That makes sense.
Which is great. So I actually may, fire this up.
Yeah.
And, get infuriated.
I was just about to say, when you get to some of the songs that you don't know why that's there, you go, what the?
What?
You do your Danielle in your car.
Winning the game 72-71.
Why are they playing John Lennon, number 11 in the 80s all time, and no one ever heard of the...
That 80s one was weird. And 80s, I can appreciate some of what they're doing, because people think of 80s music, quote unquote, as like its own genre of music. So you expect it to be certain songs. Well, no, 80s music should be anything that came out.
In the 80s?
In the 80s.
Like
we think that all 70s concept. Music has to sound like disco,
The disco is only
like
it's
all got to sound like ABBA and the Bee Gees, there's a lot more to this.
No.
70s was a great decade for music, and it was, trust me, way more than ABBA and the Bee Gees.
It's before 77. There's a lot of good music in the 70s. No,
the
I understand
80s
what
is that
saying.
Same thing, But you know what I mean when I talk about that sort of like that quote-unquote 80s pop, that top 40.
Not everything had to sound like Rick Springfield.
MTV, and that's really what I think jumped it. No, there was a lot of other music, other genre music. There was rock. There was all kinds of music in the 80s that we just don't think of as 80s music, because it doesn't have that heavy synth or bad 80s saxophone.
Hey, I love my 80s saxophone. There are so many songs that came up in that 80s list that they get to the bridge and here comes that sax. It's like, oh yeah, there it is. There's that 80s sax.
Oh.
Gotta have some Careless Whisper. Gotta have that.
That's the first
sax.
Song that pops into my head when I hear bad 80s sax.
Hey, quintessential 80s. Gotta have some sax.
It is. Well, that was fun. See, we somehow always managed to turn a show of nothing into a show about something.
I can't believe we made almost 2 hours out of that. I really
and we
can't.
Broke down the greatest Denver Nuggets and Utah Jazz players as voted on by nobody.
And I even had one last small grievance that I didn't even get out. It's just that R&B list is just too broad. you can't go from, like I said, Marvin Gaye to T-Pain to Stevie Wonder to Doja Cat. They tried to do too much. They tried to fit – they had Beyonce in there. They had they were just trying to – they had the Supremes. Like, you can't – you cannot compare a song from 1965 to Beyonce's latest hit. It doesn't sound anywhere near this. There's no way you can make a comparison as far as I'm concerned, because there's just so much difference in that R&B versus this R&B. Like, that R&B was rhythm and blues. It really had some blues elements. It really was something that was musically way different than what they're doing today, which everything today is basically hip-hop beat with some synthesizers and voice modulation and all that. It doesn't sound anything like, you know, what they did back then. I just don't think you could have a – there's no list, in my opinion, that should have Marvin Gaye and T-Pain on it at the same time. That's not the same thing. That is not the same thing at all. So that was my last grievance.
Okay. Well, you are allowed that. Because, like you said, it's – because when you specifically say a style of music, this isn't like saying a decade, where anything that happened in that decade should fit in the box, R&B or rock. This is you're giving the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame argument right now.
So, yeah, I guess the
anti-version of that argument.
The same argument would be if they had the top rock songs of all time and they're going to put The Who, The Beatles, and Smashing Pumpkins. Like, it just, it's not the same thing. It's just...
Yeah, it's a style clash there. It doesn't fit.
No. The greatest rock of all time is kind of... I guess maybe I'm putting it in a box and saying that should be basically anything before, like, 1998, because rock kind of died after grunge, in my opinion. But I just don't imagine that you could make a greatest rock list of all time and have anything modern, because it's just not good. And R&B is kind of the same thing. The R&B of today, it's good, but it's not really R&B. It's basically hip hop, as far as I'm concerned. So, but that's I'm sure there's actual musicians that can have a much more intelligent argument about it than me. It almost sounds like me arguing football coverages and offensive line stances. Like, I have an understanding of it. It's just not a good one, but I'm very resolute in my opinions about it. So I will yell about it as long as I can.
Okay. And, well, that was a good show.
Yeah. Now it's time for me to rest my voice so I can yell about this interview tomorrow morning and hopefully perform a lot better than I have been performing.
Well, I clearly could tell that the clock must have gone off for you, that it was showtime. You know, we needed to do a show, because you're all of a sudden like, oh, let's get a show in.
Yeah, I'm doing all these interviews. I got another interview scheduled tomorrow. I got another one scheduled Friday. I'm like, something's about to happen in the next month or so as far as this football thing. I just got a good feeling about it, and I wanted to get a show in before it happens so we can have some point of reference. I didn't want to have a show after I get hired for all of this and try to explain all of it in that show in July or something like that. So, wanted to get
hopefully
this stuff
we
can
have a show with the opposite result.
Hopefully I'm not crying in my beer in July and talking about all the opportunities that I lost. Because
you haven't
I didn't
put
know.
Any money on this, have you? They don't have.
They do like, not have any
odds.
Of my money.
They don't have odds
not,
on this anywhere.
I have not invested in this. I have not bet on it. I'm just really, really hoping that something good comes about. So.
That's good.
Whoever's listening, give me your best juju out there and hope for the best.
So
wrap this
it.
Up. Oh, thank you. It might play a little bit with our show. It might be some Saturdays where I'm not available. We might have to get at it Sunday morning.
I'm around most Sundays. I'm around most Friday nights, so we'll make it work.
And it won't be that many because it's college, so it's, you know, September, October,
right.
and that's about it. And the first week or two in November, and that's pretty much anything. After Thanksgiving is bowl season. I wouldn't be involved in any of that. So we'll see how it all works out. All right. So, yeah, thanks for hanging in with me and doing a list back at me. And we both did our KC Cates of the night, and we both counted them down. So.
And we both had some infuriating moments. So that's great. Some head scratchers.
Some head scratchers for sure. That's absolutely right. So everyone out there, keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars. Had to do it. Oh, Miss Casey Kasem.
I'll allow it.
Thank you. and you referenced jumps, so I guess we'll have to go out with that. He is Jay. I am Dre. This has been, as if you couldn't tell, Kings of Non-Sequitur.
I actually didn't reference that song, but damn, where's that one?
You didn't? I could have sworn you threw that in there.
No.
Okay.
I did not bring in any Van Halen, but yeah, wow. Just
yeah. That's absolutely iconic as well.
All I can think about when I hear that, though, is
I know.
The leadoff man.
WGN, Chicago Cubs baseball.
Oh my God, that's taking me back. But that was the lead in for the leadoff man, right?
For all of it, for the leadoff man and for the real broadcast.
Yeah.
For the game broadcast. Yeah, that was all of it.
That was
a magical 84,
right?
Season. Yes.
Man.
We were there. Yeah. We remember it because we were there. All right. I have no idea
what
our next show will be.
George Michael Sports Machine.
But we will be back at you sometime in July, and hopefully I'll have some good news as far as...
Not that George Michael.
Different George Michael. We'll talk to you later, folks.